Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Unbalanced Note, the music podcast on the Multimedia Men Network on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Yes, this is episode number 8, everyone. We've been gone for a couple weeks. We've had a hiatus. We've had some things to do. There's been wrestling. There's been out of town. There's been holidays. There's been music. There's been movies. We don't fucking know, but I'm Brian Kluger, and usually I'm joined by Jacob Douglas. He's unfortunately not able to be here. He is at the Wiz Khalifa concert, I believe. Allegedly, he's at the Wiz Khalifa concert. But in his stead, you know this man from this network. He can be described as a... let's see. He is...
Asshole sometimes.
Asshole. No. He's like the Luke Skywalker of pop art. He's devastatingly handsome.
Wait, which version of Luke Skywalker?
Well, like Last Jedi?
Okay, I'll take that one.
No, I didn't know. Like Last Jedi or A New Hope?
No, he does some like serious Jedi shit in Last Jedi.
Yes.
So yeah, I'll take that one.
So you know this man, Jonathan Kimbrell, and he's here. How are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Not so bad.
That's good to hear.
Long time being on a show. What have you been up to? What's going on in your world?
Well, I just woke up.
Oh, well, good. Thank God it's only like 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So here it's like 3:30 a.m.
Oh, shit.
So John's looking up at the sky as like a sundial to see what time it is.
While I'm eating raisins.
Yes, he's eating raisins. We have the snacks out. He's got a beer from the Lakewood?
Lakewood Brewery.
Kolsch.
I got to stay regular.
Dallas native. So we have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about the Birds later on, one of the coolest and most influential bands that doesn't get mentioned as often as, let's say, the Beatles or Beach Boys, but they definitely should. They're one of the B's, and they're more or less maybe better than both those bands. We don't know. We're going to discuss it. We're also going to do a one-hit wonder later on, which will be a surprise. It's going to be awesome. It's one of Kimbrell's favorite things in the world. But first, of course, we are going to talk about a little bit of music news here and there and see what Kimbrell has to say about it, because this man, if there ever was music, like, so you know Jacob on the show, he knows his music stuff, but Kimbrell knows his music too. And like, first off, Kimbrell, when did you get into music? I would say you're a music, not snob, but like encyclopedia. Like if I was to play trivia music style, I want you on my team.
I'm the reason why a lot of people don't let me play. I'm not allowed to play the music version of Trivial Pursuit. I'm the one that has to ask the questions.
Okay.
Which sucks because I want to answer them because I know them before I turn the card over.
Okay. There you go.
When did I get into music? I've actually always kind of been into music.
Have you always been into good music, though?
Yes.
Always. So from way on, you were enjoying like the finer things in music, not just top 40. And then you switched over to like, oh, okay, I get this.
No, I've always kind of known what the good stuff is versus the bad stuff.
Okay.
I mean, you have to know the bad shit to know the good shit.
Correct. I agree with that. Same with movies.
I had parents that, you know, played classic rock radio in the car when we were driving around. So we'd always quiz each other on who was singing what. I'd always fail on Aerosmith's Dream On, though. I don't know why. It doesn't sound like Aerosmith until Steven Tyler starts screaming.
No, of course. Like that absolutely. It does not sound like an Aerosmith song at all. It's unfortunately they didn't go that route the entire weight of their career.
Yeah, I shouldn't have closed my eyes. Shouldn't have gone to sleep.
They did. You don't want to miss a thing, which finally got them to number one. But
Travesty.
Travesty. Thank you, Michael Bay. But so you've always been into the music stuff in the industry. And I feel like you've actually studied music. You take pride in your music collection. You read the liner notes from top to bottom.
I do.
So you know your shit.
I know my shit.
You know your shit.
I have a record label too, so I
that's right.
I literally put my money where my mouth was.
So yeah, Kimbrell is a jack of all trades in the art world. Like, not only is he a purveyor of fine art and a master and wizard of all things fine art and pop art, like, you can see him, his artwork, probably across the globe. But he also started a record label several years ago and has put out amazing releases. And he's even signed a band under his label, Coal Creek Boys, right? At one point?
Yeah, Coal Creek Boys under Classic Wax Records.
But you also do, like, band tour posters and stuff for, like, big, big bands. And record art too.
Yeah,
dude, he does it all.
Actually finishing up another Alice Cooper project right now.
Oh, there you go, because you did the Live at the AstroTurf, right, which won awards. You're an award-winning artist.
No, award-winning asshole. But like Don Draper said, it doesn't make the work any better. So
see, there you go. It's very true, because you have two award winners at this table, award-winning actor right here as of recently, and an award-winning artist right here. So damn good.
Woo!
Woo! As Ric Flair would say.
Because Brian's wearing a Ric Flair shirt right now.
I am. I went to Raw last night. It was crazy. It was fun.
You should see it.
You should see it
through the airwaves right now.
You should see it and smell it too.
It smells fresh.
All right. First bit of news coming up. Bob Seger announces final tour. The Silver Bullet Band are retiring from the road. Bob Seger has been around since the 60s. And now he is going to be doing his farewell tour.
Like Kiss for the next 20 years.
He'll be like 103 then. So the tour begins in November and stretches through 2019. Seger's 2017 album, I Knew You When, featured a cover of Lou Reed's song, Busload of Faith. Are you a Bob Seger fan?
Not so much the older, like, 70s Bob Seger stuff.
The underground stuff, though.
Yeah, I kind of like the earlier, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, Bob Seger system stuff. Like, really cool, like, white boy Detroit soul.
I'm looking at a picture of him, and he kind of looks like a less hairier Kenny Rogers.
That's a good description. definitely, a 70s rock staple. If someone gave me tickets, I'd go see him, but I probably wouldn't buy them myself.
There you go. But, yeah, his final tour, Bob Seger. Is there a Pete Seger?
Yeah, he's not alive anymore.
Okay.
No relation.
Though. No relation.
No relations.
No relations. Good Boondock reference. Okay, Bob Seger final tour. We are neither here nor there about this, but... somebody who's been around a long time. There you go. Let's also dive into Father John Misty news. Father John Misty details new Live at the Third Man album. So are you a fan of Father John Misty?
Negative, Houston.
Really? But you're a fan of Jack White's Third Man Records, right?
Or
used to be.
I'm still a Jack White / Third Man Records fan. I don't know. I feel like his attentions are extremely divided as of late. I'm not as excited about Third Man projects going on as I used to be. Unless it's Dead Weather or Margo Price. but I don't know. I like some of Father John Misty stuff. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan, but I do keep up with what Third Man's doing and putting out. So
what about Father John Misty makes you angry? Or not like him?
He comes off as extremely arrogant.
All right. I'm just not into that.
No.
You could also say Axl Rose might come off of like that, too.
Oh, there's no might about it. He does come off as an arrogant
But I guess
shit,
he's cooler than Father John Misty.
No.
No? Really?
No. No, Guns N' Roses had the opportunity to be like one of the biggest bands in the world, but his ego and the rest of the band's ego got in the way of that.
Imploded.
Yeah. I mean, not to mention the drug addictions that almost every member of the band had too, but yeah, when it comes to ego, that's just kind of a buzzkill for me.
Okay. Okay, so Father John Misty has a Third Man record thing coming out, and it's going to feature, I guess, his live acoustic performance, solo performance from Third Man Records with 7 tracks on it, including tracks as Holy Shit and So I'm Growing Old on Magic Mountain and Chateau Lobby No. 4 in C for 2 Virgins. If you're a Father John Misty fan, which Kimbrell is not,
I'm over 2.
Yeah. Let him. There you go for Father John Misty fans. Here's a bit of annoying news because, all right, this news is basically about Eminem, which I don't think Eminem's had a good album since his 2nd album. I think. Just everything he's put out has been shit since like the late 90s, I think. If that's when he came out, I guess. 97 was Slim Shady. I don't even remember. Who cares? But he has a new album that came out called Kamikaze. Kimbrell, have you seen the album cover for Kamikaze?
I have. And
so tell the people what the album art, if they don't already know.
So it's very reminiscent of a particular Beastie Boys album.
Correct. Licensed to Ill.
It's that
famous iconic artwork of kind of like the drawn airplane, half of an airplane. And John Kimbrell says it's reminiscent. I say it's straight on the same shit. Same colors, same everything. Maybe the decals on the plane are different.
But I noticed one different decal. so there's on Eminem's cover, it says FU2. But that made me wonder, like, is that a jab at the band U2? Or is that a jab at, you know, you in general, like, fuck U2?
Well, I don't know.
Or maybe both.
Yeah, it could be both. He's talking.
He doesn't strike me as a guy who digs U2. Or Bono.
Yeah, who knows? I do not know. But supposedly, in a long interview with Ad Rock and Mike D, two of the surviving members of Beastie Boys, supposedly Ad Rock and Mike D said that Eminem did not ask them about mimicking the cover artwork. And so basically that's saying like they did not know until the album was released and they just got tons of text messages from everybody and they're like, what the hell? So with this in mind, Kimbrell, you being an artist and everything and copyright and shit, is this copyright or is this artistic freedom? Is this kind of a dick move on Eminem not saying like, hey, Beastie Boys, I love your album. Can I kind of use it for my new album? Is there like an unwritten code in artists that you should ask for permission, or is this cool to do? What do you think? And should we say fuck Eminem?
No, my wife digs Eminem, so
okay,
she'll probably listen to this at some point too. I don't know. See, if I were, you know, the Beastie Boys, I would definitely have grounds for filing copyright infringement lawsuit. I mean, it's very similar.
It's like the same shit.
It's 95% similar, minus some word changes that Eminem has on his record cover. In his defense, playing devil's advocate, I'm sure Eminem was thinking, oh, this is a great homage to a very influential album in the rap world. But I think it's too on the nose.
Well, I get that, but wouldn't you like Eminem and Beastie Boys probably have each other's numbers, I would imagine.
Maybe.
And would you like, hey, Beastie Boys, it's Eminem. Love the album, bro. Can I use kind of something like this?
I don't know. Maybe this is his way of starting a a Midwest West or East Coast feud.
So he just wants to generate controversy with his album.
Yeah, probably.
Which would you say is fine?
I mean, it's Eminem's MO, so
okay.
There's no real surprise. It's of course he's not going to ask permission. You know, most artists, they know the unspoken rule is you ask for permission, or you don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness later.
But it's like so blatant. It really is the same album cover. It's really weird.
It really is. And from a record label standpoint, I would be pissed off because I would think that was trying to drive album sales away from Beastie Boys records.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Eminem doing the Beastie Boys cover. It's almost maybe somebody like, you know, what's a band today? Like, I'd hate to say it, like Imagine Dragons. I fucking hate them so much. Who? But what if they did the Abbey Road, the exact Abbey Road image on the disc? Like, people would lose their fucking minds.
They would. I don't know. It's a hard call. I mean, because everyone knows, like, Abbey Road cover is pretty iconic.
Yeah, but you can just take a picture of the same people doing the same thing.
Yeah. And this isn't a dig to Beastie Boys or anything, but I think the Beatles are on their own upper echelon
true.
Of legendary status that even if you were to take a blatant rip of Abbey Road or Sgt. Pepper or something, it's done as a tribute or homage, a tip of the hat. Like, because everyone loves Beatles, but not everyone loves Eminem. Not everyone loves Beastie Boys.
Correct.
I'm sorry, sad to say, but...
You know, it's interesting. Not everybody loves Beastie Boys. We have to do, like, a research project. I'm like, who doesn't like Beastie Boys? Because that very...
Well, I would like to know who doesn't like Beastie
Boys. Because I would imagine most people, like... Most people love Beatles. Most people love Beastie Boys. There's just, you're going to find very rare people, very little people that don't like those bands.
I mean, if anything, everyone loves the song Sabotage.
It's
used in every movie soundtrack. It's that good.
At least the last three Star Trek movies for sure.
That's why I kept going to see that movie.
Yes, yes, yes. But yes, there you go. You heard it here. Let's move on to a little bit more news. David Lynch, the director, and Angelo Badalamenti's lost 1990s album is getting released finally. Woodcutters from Fiery Ships, from their record Thought Gang, finally being released. Do you like David Lynch? Do you like these people?
Who?
David Lynch, Twin Peaks.
Just kidding.
Yes, there you go.
I do like David Lynch. I'm not too familiar with his music pursuits. I do like his television and film direction. I know it'd be interesting to give a listen.
Yes, it seems like it's 12 tracks long, and it's called Thought Gang. You can listen to the song Woodcutters from Fiery Ships, and supposedly it's a lot of instrumentation and with a bassist. So,
is it anything like Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor, that kind of...
You know what? I actually haven't listened to it, but...
Maybe we can revisit that for next episode.
Yeah, for sure.
We have homework to do.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. But like the first song on the album is called Stalin Revisited. so that's what we're getting into. This is from the 90s. This has not been released. So finally getting released.
Speaking of music from the 90s, I did see that Lenny Kravitz's first few albums are getting the vinyl reissue treatment.
That's good because I like early Lenny Kravitz.
I do too. And I don't want to drop $250 on an original LP copy of Mama Said or Circus.
Seriously. Yeah, absolutely not.
So I'm excited.
I'm excited about double
LP editions of those albums. Are You Gonna Go My Way? His number five album.
The number five album was so good. Those songs were everywhere on every commercial, movie, and video game when that album came out.
Yeah, shit, that was our junior year of high school.
Yes, it was. That was American Woman, I'm Gonna Fly Away, and what's the other one? I'm going to fly away. And then, oh, God damn it. Are you going to go my way now? Are you going to go my way?
No, that was early night.
Oh, that was early night. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm excited.
But
actually, there's a lot of really good reissues coming out soon that I'm already feeling broke and I haven't pre-ordered anything.
Speaking of 90s, a band from the 90s, the Smashing Pumpkins, supposedly have announced a new album.
Interesting.
Are you in this? I guess this album is called Shiny and Oh So Bright Volume 1, LP: No Past, No Future, No Sun.
Is that in reference to Billy Corgan's head?
I would imagine. I mean, we all like Billy Corgan in a way that he loves wrestling and tried to manage a wrestling promotion called TNA for a while. Didn't work out very well for him or anybody else. But Smashing Pumpkins coming back with a new album. I think my first real intro to them was a Bullet with Butterfly Wings.
Yeah, but maybe, from Melancholy.
Yeah. But they've been around a long time, and yes, they have a new album, and holy God, it is 8 tracks long. And yeah, what do you think? Should Smashing Pumpkins call it quits, or should they keep going?
No, keep going, man. Yeah. Shit, look at Mick Jagger.
He ain't putting out anything new.
No. Well, not any new Stones material. Not recently, anyway. But, you know, he's still shaking his ass on the stage. And, you know, still no one's told Keith Richards he's dead yet. So he'll keep going.
There you go.
The one reissue on my list, though, is the 50th anniversary of the Kinks Village Green Preservation Society.
Yes. I can't wait for that.
Like the Uber Deluxe box set that has both the mono and stereo versions, all these unreleased bonus tracks, alternate takes.
Which ones do you listen to when they come with mono and stereo? Because I know you have both the Beatles mono and stereo, maybe, I think. Or you used to.
I have them.
Which do you listen to? Do you listen to, like, the original pressings?
No, I'm actually a little spoiled on the reissues, especially the mono releases. Because mono is the way that the Beatles intended for everyone to hear them.
Correct.
They really had nothing to do with the stereo mixes. That was all the engineer afterwards. Granted, they're still good. You know, like the later albums, I think, sound better in stereo. Like some of the cuts off White Album, some of the stuff off Yellow Submarine is good in mono. But like the earlier stuff, I like all that direct, you know, single channel sound. Same thing with the Stones and Dylan. Like, that's how they wanted you to hear their stuff. And that's how it came out on the car radios.
So is that in the 60s. Same with the Kinks?
Yeah. Yeah. Until, I guess, like 67, 68, when they started phasing out mono for stereo.
Okay.
Yeah. Seriously? Although mono Hendrix sounds weird because, you know, like, he's very experimental.
Yes.
And so hearing a, you know, kind of a flat, compressed sound when you're supposed to hear it panning from left to right speaker, it kind of falls flat. But so I prefer Hendrix in stereo.
Well, speaking of Hendrix and the 50th anniversary, Electric Ladyland is getting a 50th anniversary box set reissue.
Yes, indeed.
And you and I think we've purchased sets of Jimi Hendrix. And is the question, is there too much Hendrix you can own?
No.
So you will definitely be doing this.
I will definitely be buying this album.
Okay, featuring previously unreleased demos, alternate takes, unseen photos, and more. 50th anniversary of 1968's album Electric Ladyland, which will come from Legacy, and a big box set. The deluxe edition is available on my birthday. Hint, Kimbrell, November 9th. As either a 3-CD set or a 6-LP set. It was remastered by Bernie Grundman, who did an analog direct-to-disc vinyl transfer of the original LP, as well as a new 5.1 surround sound mix of the original album.
And if you're audio junkies, like, you know Bernie Grundman's the shit.
Yeah?
Like, he's
worked with everybody, right?
Yeah, and he's he's remastered most of all of the classic records being reissued on vinyl. Like, he's the go-to guy.
There you go.
I can't afford them, so.
Not yet.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. So the box set will include the albums with demos, studio outtakes, and more, but it will also include the 1997 documentary, At Last, The Beginning, the Making of Electric Ladyland, on Blu-ray, and the unreleased live recording Jimi Hendrix Experience Live at the Hollywood Bowl from September 14th, 1968. It will feature a 48-page book with handwritten lyrics, poems, and instructions. God damn it. I'm going to have to buy this again.
And it's actually the anniversary of Hendrix's passing, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he was part of the 27 Club, wasn't he?
Yep.
And we just did a show of him last week, I believe, Jimi Hendrix, on this Unbalanced Note. He was our main event. But, 50th anniversary of Electric Ladyland, I guess my Hendrix collection and Kimbrell's will be getting larger.
Yep. And if you want to dig into the Kinks Village Green box set, that comes out, I think, late October.
Yeah. Are we going to see, we'll probably see some form of Jimi Hendrix Record Store Day release for Black Friday, right?
Probably. I don't know. We'll see.
There's usually like a single at least.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, Hendrix, good stuff. Moving on. Al Green, my man.
He's got a new album out.
Releases his first new song in over 10 years. What do you think about this?
Amen, Al Green.
His last album was in 2008, which Questlove produced. But today... You know, he has his first new song, and it's a cover of Before the Next Teardrop Falls, and is being released as the latest installment of, Amazon Music's, produced by series. But it's kind of cool. I'm still glad he's making music, because Al Green's one of the OGs.
Yeah. And speaking of soul, there is a new Charles Bradley album coming out soon.
Charles Bradley is the one that died, right?
Yeah, he passed away.
Yeah, it's like recently.
Yeah.
Like in the last year?
Yeah.
Okay. But so this is, he recorded this, but it's going to be released posthumously. How do you say that?
Posthumously?
Yes.
Yeah. Almost. So, it's not like re-recordings of old material. It's stuff that he recorded during those sessions that got shelved, and they're coming out finally.
Okay.
So, I'm excited.
That's good.
I'm still pissed that I didn't get to see him live, but I will buy his records.
Me too. Charles Bradley and Barrence Whitfield, those two guys I kind of found out at the same time, and they're both kind of older black dudes who play badass soul music.
We need more of that.
Yes, we do.
If you're listening.
I agree. Jack White announces new concert film and live EP. It's called Jack White Kneeling at the Anthem, D.C. Are we over Jack White? We still love Jack White. I mean, I saw him recently when he came through Dallas.
I still love Jack White. I got to meet the man last year in Detroit, and I got to give him one of my Johnny Cash records that I produced.
Which is badass.
It was cool. Live at Big D Jamboree from back in the 50s. He's very nice, very gracious person. Very nice to talk to. I still like what he does. I don't know if the world needs more White Stripes live releases.
They just need to get back together, because nobody's buying his solo albums recently. Because at least the last one didn't do well at all.
Yeah, it's a different record.
Yeah, it is.
I still haven't absorbed it yet.
Correct. And then he's not going back to the Raconteurs anytime soon. I don't see another Dead Weather release anytime soon. White Stripes, that's what everybody wants. Do a reunion tour, do a new album. Do you know how much a White Stripes album would sell these days? People would go crazy for it.
Yeah, I think it would do well. I don't see Meg White coming out of the shadows anytime soon to hop on that bandwagon.
In this Me Too movement, everybody would be supporting her. What are you talking about? The future is females, what everybody says.
I don't know. I think she made it pretty clear that she was done with the record business when she retired. And
but I mean, Jack White has his own label, basically, so they could call the shots themselves. Unless they're on bad terms, but I mean, shit. Just think about it. New White Stripes album, you're guaranteed like $30 million.
I mean, it would be a big seller for sure. I would rather see new Dead Weather. Even if it was a single, I would be all over that. But, you know, between Jack White's label and his pressing plan and his baseball bat factory here in Deep Ellum and all the other shit that he does, who knows? He's probably too busy.
Yeah, well, we don't know, but yeah, it would be awesome to see that. But yeah, he's still doing stuff. He has this new concert film and live EP, so look out for that, you Jack White fans. Also, one of the last bits of news, this form of a soundtrack. There's a new movie coming out that I'll actually see this coming week called Climax, and it is directed by Gaspard Noé, who is a French filmmaker known for like very brutal films such as Irreversible and I Stand Alone and Enter the Void. But I guess this Climax soundtrack, which looks like a sexual musical dance movie, looks like it's going to have a new song by Daft Punk's Thomas Bangalter, with tracks called Sangria. But this movie looks insane. Look up the trailer. But there is an excellent soundtrack to this, including Soft Cell's Tainted Love and also Neon Aphex Twins. Aphex Twins or Aphex Twins? I never know.
Sure.
Mars Pump Up the Volumes. It's like very 80s. So, but yes, new stuff from Daft Punk. Very excited. Look for that. And then before we get to our one hit wonder, I just want to talk about a recent record I reviewed. It was a soundtrack. They re-released John Carpenter's Big Trouble in Little China soundtrack on vinyl. It has, I believe, 11 new tracks on it, which are from the film, more instrumentation of some of the smaller moments in the movie, which is excellent. And it still has the Coupe de Villes on there, which consists of John Carpenter and a couple other filmmakers doing the Big Trouble in Little China song. And it is a gatefold from Mondo. It is a red translucent vinyl with yellow splashes. It's badass. There is even a flyer for Egg Chen's tour bus in there.
No Kim Cattrall picture disc?
No Kim Cattrall picture disc, unfortunately. Gracie Law. But
you had me at a loss.
But yeah, so I compared it with the original, because I have the original pressing of that soundtrack, and there's only a few songs on it, but this one, it looks good. They're both on 180 gram. It's in Mondo. If you can find it, buy it. It's great. You a Big Trouble Little China fan?
Absolutely. I love anything John Carpenter does.
So would you own any John Carpenter soundtracks? I know you don't like soundtracks too much, but
I would totally own the Christine soundtrack.
Okay.
Because right, that's good 50s rock and roll.
Yes, it is.
I would own the soundtrack to The Fog.
That's a good one.
Not the shitty remake that came out in the 90s.
No, the original one.
The absolute original. Halloween.
Yeah.
Is still one of my favorite horror movies.
It's good.
Actually, all of my favorite horror movies are John Carpenter directed.
I think I have most of John Carpenter's albums on vinyl, interestingly enough. I love listening to They Live because it's just like the same doom, 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 over and over for like 45 minutes.
That is such a great movie.
It is such a great movie.
And the extended, you know, 30-minute fight scene between Roddy Piper and Keith David is just excellent.
Yes, yes. It is so good. But that
Escape from New York's another.
That is another one. I have that on vinyl too.
Did he direct Escape from LA?
Yes, he did.
Okay. I don't think that one was as good, but
no, he did Prince of Darkness, And he did, oh my goodness. I'm trying to remember the other ones. The Thing, which is great.
The Thing is awesome.
Yes.
And I'm seeing the Mondo reissue of that soundtrack, and it look the packaging is stellar.
Yeah, I don't have the reissue. Mm. I have the original pressing of that, but it's super cool.
Mondo does some good shit. I like what they do. Being a design geek and a vinyl geek, like, they kind of bring the best of both worlds.
Correct. Yeah, the artwork for Big Trouble in Little China, I think it's done by something like Phantom something. It's like a collective of artists. But the artwork is basically all these really cool artistic of pretty much every character from the movie on the cover, and it looks cool. Definitely better than the original pressing, I guess, because it's just kind of like the movie poster.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of like a picture of them looking upwards. But yeah, it's badass.
And Mondo, if anyone at Mondo is listening, like, I would like a reissue with Kim Cattrall picture disc.
There you go. What scene, though? Do you want her in the geisha one, or just like her as the reporter?
Sure.
Okay, there you go. One side, Gracie Law, the other side, the geisha one.
They can even, you know, borrow a scene out of Mannequin.
Just some sort of nude Kim Cattrall picture disc. That's all we're asking.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying nude, but...
I'm saying nude.
Brian's saying nude.
I'm saying nude. Go, Kim Cattrall. Your first film, I think. Oh, no, maybe Mannequin was before that. I can't remember.
Is it weird to say that she's my favorite character in Sex and the City?
No. She probably was the best character in Sex and the City. Everybody else was super annoying.
Agreed.
So you're not weird for saying that at all.
Okay. All right, moving on.
moving on. All right, we're going to do our one-hit wonder right now. And interestingly, we just brought it up.
Nice segue.
It is Tainted Love by Soft Cell, but it wasn't always by Soft Cell. So Tainted Love came out in 1965, and it was a song composed by a dude named Ed Cobb, formerly of an American group called The Four Preps, which was originally recorded by Gloria Jones in 1964. So Gloria Jones made this, but nobody gave a shit about it until 1981, when a group called Soft Cell came out and covered it. Holy God. So if you know Soft Cell, they're like the stereotypical 80s English synth band.
Yeah.
And they became aware of the song through the UK. And I guess they were like, yeah, we have to do this. So their recording featured a slower tempo than Jones's version, and was in the key of G rather than C. But yeah, what do you think about this song?
So I have two interesting facts about this song.
Okay.
One, it was on my wedding playlist.
It was, sir. I remember. I was there.
Yes. And two, it is one of my go-to karaoke songs.
Okay, so when somebody asks you what's your go-to karaoke song, and you say this, why? Because, well, let me see if I have the answer. Because it's fun to sing, maybe easy to sing, and it gets the crowd to sing along with you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So if I'm going to embarrass myself... And usually I have a couple of drinks before I get the courage to go up on stage. I can sing this song in my own comfort, get the crowd singing, and get high fives at the end.
Is this a shower song too?
No. Not so much shower song. That's reserved for Willie Nelson.
Okay. So, Tainted Love, from Soft Cell at least, it was, well, on the U.S. chart in 1982, the song entered the Billboard chart at number 90 and rose all the way up, and it stayed on the charts for 43 weeks.
That's impressive.
That's almost a year for this fucking song.
Yeah. That's like That's Beatles caliber.
It is. It's crazy. And you think of this song, and you know, like this group, Soft Cell. It's super weird because Soft Cell, if you see them, they're just like they're weird dudes. Like, you know,
in that there.
Yeah, they almost kind of look like there should be like a German techno robot pop group, but they're not. And this is their song, Soft Cell.
Yeah. They sound like Devo, but look like Judas Priest.
It's crazy. Like, they were number one in so many countries. It's unbelievable. They sold 500,000 singles of this song in the United Kingdom alone. I'm not sure how many they sold in the U.S. yet, but good God, it's platinum. But, yeah, there was a music video recorded with this. There was remixes. And then Spike Jonze directed a commercial for Levi's Jeans, which they used this song as well. But we also...
I did not know that.
Yes, he did. And also, we probably all remember from the early 90s, a movie called Coneheads.
Yes.
Based off the SNL. And they actually sing the song in the movie with Dan Aykroyd singing the... No, wait. Tainted Love. Wait. Is that the... Yeah, that's what he thinks. Tainted Love. They sing Tainted Love, right? In that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's crazy.
It's genius.
It is genius. And it's weird that they did that. And then, back in the early 2000s, Marilyn Manson covered this song, which is actually a really good version.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, Marilyn Manson, you know, he's covered several 80s songs. And most recently, he covered Cry Little Sister from the Lost Boys movie, which is excellent. But he did this, you know, he got really famous for Sweet Dreams from the Eurythmics, but he also did this one, and I think it's really good.
I wonder if he would be willing to cover, like, the Care Bears theme song and put his, like, creepy twist on it.
That would be super cool. I like Marilyn Manson.
Like, you know, all those, you know, lullaby albums for children? You know, but they have one for Marilyn Manson.
Yes.
Or he just needs to make a lullaby album.
Which would be awesome.
Be scary as fuck. But
it'd be really cool. So I guess his version of Tainted Love was part of that movie from 2001 called Not Another Teen Movie. That spoof Naked Gun type movie.
Yeah.
Which is super funny. But yes, it is super good. But yes, that is Tainted Love. That is Soft Cell. One hit wonder. I'm trying to think. Soft Cell. Did they have any huge hits other than this song? I'm trying to remember. Tainted Love was their big one. I think like maybe Torch or Say Hello, Wave Goodbye, Bedsitter. But none of them. No, nobody knows those songs. They only know Tainted Love, right?
That's the only one they play on the radio. Unless you're on like Sirius XM, you might hear something else. But
it's really weird because Soft Cell's only had six albums since 1981. Most recently in 2005. So, you know, who knows what's happening with them.
Do they have a greatest hits?
I don't know, actually. Let's see. Soft Cell discography. Oh, my God. One of their albums is called This Last Night in Sodom. My goodness. There's three live albums. There's some compilation albums, the singles, the very best of Soft Cell. There you go. Which...
So it's just, you know, Tainted Love on repeat.
Tainted Love, Bedsitter, the ones I mentioned, which I don't know. There's a song called Sex Dwarf on it.
I do know that one.
You do know Sex Dwarf?
Yeah, I heard that on the radio the other day, and I was just... laughing.
On what radio station?
XM, the the new wave channel, 33, I think.
Well, there you go.
Sex Dwarf.
Hell of a campaign.
I think that was a theme song for Alf.
I could see that. I'm so glad Alf is on streaming right now because I watched a few episodes and it still holds up. And Alf Pogs.
Oh, Pogs. Moving on
to the main event. The main band we're talking about on this eighth episode. They are known as the Birds.
The Boyds.
The Birds, a band from Los Angeles, California, formed in 1964 and consisted of a crazy amount of talent, including David Crosby, Gene Clark, Michael Clark, and Jim McGuinn.
Otherwise known as Roger McGuinn.
Correct, in his 12-string guitar. This is insane. I'm missing Chris Hillman, of course, but holy shit, the Birds. How can you describe the Birds?
So I actually had this conversation with Jacob the other day.
Fantastic.
Who I thought was the greatest American rock and roll band. And I had...
Well, hold on. Before you answer that, before we talk about that, what's the greatest American rock and roll band? It's hard to... Well, most people would definitely not mention this. And most people would mention, like, they would probably... Oh, Beatles, Rolling Stones. Like, those are not American.
Nope.
So, okay. No. Continue.
My top two best American bands are the Birds and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Okay, yes.
Which is essentially the same band. If you think about it, they're all intermingled, related to each other. I mean, hell, Tom Petty even produced an album for Roger McGuinn back in the 80s, so there you go.
It's all incestuous, which we like.
But, I mean, other than the Beatles, you didn't have another... There was no other American rock band that had that kind of success like the Beatles. But the Birds were it.
Yeah, and you can't say the Beach Boys because that was way too different type of music, though.
I mean, the Beach Boys had, you know, a lot of chart success, but they weren't a rock and roll band.
No, they weren't.
They were a surf band.
Yes, correct.
They were a boy band, actually.
Correct.
But, you know, the Birds and the Beatles had very similar parallel as far as their, like, ladder of success and how they changed their sound over the years. And I think a lot of that was in part due to Bob Dylan's influence and marijuana. But both of those bands grew at enormous leaps and bounds during the 60s. You know, you go from their album, Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, to something like Sweetheart of the Rodeo in the later 60s, you know, completely different genres, completely different bands, but still great fucking brilliant music.
Yeah, it's their catalog is crazy to say the least. And we'll definitely get to that. But yeah, they definitely, you know, it's because you can kind of describe them, they almost have like a maybe mid to late Beatles feel to, like you said, Bob Dylan, kind of like a folky, but also rock and roll too.
Yeah. And part of that Beatles influence was when the band decided to start playing 12 string Rickenbackers.
Correct. Which is Roger McGuinn. If you say Roger McGuinn, the other side of his name should be 12 string guitar.
Yeah. But what was also fascinating about the Birds is their love of jazz, especially David Crosby's love of jazz.
Yes.
Because when they wrote 8 Miles High, it was about their trip to London, going to tour over there. But they had been listening to John Coltrane.
Yeah.
So that whole song, the arrangement of the guitar and the instrumental breakdown, that was all influenced by John Coltrane. That wasn't nowhere near the realm of understanding from most rock bands at that time. It's just... It's great. And then Gene Clark, I think, is probably one of the most underrated songwriters. You know, he's a part of that band for a while and then did a solo career. But his solo stuff is just as good, if not better, than some of the stuff he wrote for the Birds.
And he died pretty young, too, like in his 40s.
My favorite guitarist for the Birds, though, Clarence White.
Clarence White. So when you say guitarist, do you put him on par? Because Clarence White actually kind of looks like a mix between a young Ryan inside joke, but a young George Harrison and Paul McCartney put together.
I can see that.
In a way, with his goatee, in a way. And he died super young, too, in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But giving his, you know, he did like mandolin and guitar, but do you think he's one of the better guitar players of his time?
Oh, yeah. He was. He's never mentioned when you talk about great guitarists. A lot in the way, like, Rory Gallagher, Irish blues guitarist,
yeah.
Is never mentioned.
Because Clarence White was kind of more country bluegrassy stuff, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of picking and a singing.
Very, very innovative. He had, included a Bigsby B-bender on his guitar. So he was able to get that, like, really nice kind of pedal steel twang,
which is awesome,
with his guitar that no one else was really doing.
Yeah, and you have to know that Clarence White, he was so sought after and so good that he actually appeared on records as a guitarist for Everly Brothers, Joe Cocker, Ricky Nelson, Pat Boone, The Monkees, Randy Newman, Lynn Ronstadt, Arlo Guthrie, and Jackson Browne.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So, like, you guys, gals, do yourself a favor. Go seek out some Birds records, especially with Clarence White playing. A good example of his playing, especially live, is Birds Live at the Fillmore.
Oh, yeah.
It's only on CD, or you could probably find it on Spotify. I think it's on there. It's not on vinyl yet. I'm trying to get the powers of B to, like, put this album on vinyl because it's one of the best live records. It's up there with the Who Live at the Alawite.
Oh, hell yeah.
So.
And so not only were these people that we mentioned in the band, but part of the Alan Parsons Project was in this band too.
Oh, yeah.
Graham and Gene Parsons were members of this band. Because they, like Kimbrell said, they've changed their sound. They've changed over the years. And Parsons came in at some point.
Mm-hmm. I guess technically the last Birds album that came out, at least under Columbia, but they did an album called Farther Along.
Mm-hmm.
Very like country folk oriented, yes. Almost kind of going back to the roots a little bit. But by that point, there's only four members of the Birds, and I want to say Roger McGuinn was probably the only original member at that point.
Yeah, because this was late 60s, early 70s era.
Mm-hmm. But one of the members at that time, Skip Batten, he does a really cool song called America's Great National Pastime. And very, very political, very jarring. Still applies today if you listen to the lyrics. I've got that on 45 and I play it really loud. And I've got a ton of other Birds on 45 that I play loud too. So
you just have to kind of play Birds loud. I think even like kind of their quieter songs, it just, their harmony, their vocals, they're just badass.
They're good.
Yes.
Especially Sweetheart of the Rodeo. That's pretty much everyone's introduction to, country rock. I guess they were the ones that really pioneered that crossover sound.
Well, we have to talk about the discography because, I mean, their first album was Mr. Tambourine Man, released in 1965 of June. And holy fucking Moses, this is what you give the world first. Like, it's insane. Like, nobody's ever heard the Birds before. Here it is, and you're like, oh my God, Mr. Tambourine Man, I'll feel a whole lot better. Spanish Harlem Incident, you know.
All three Bob Dylan songs.
Exactly.
Well, and it was also different back in that time because the music publishers were the ones pushing the songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the money was. So, you know, you have a cash cow like Bob Dylan. And everyone yes. wants to cover a Bob Dylan
yeah.
song.
Yeah.
But you got, you know, the publishing royalties pouring in. So Bird's debut album, half of it's basically Dylan songs.
Yes.
And then their second album is basically half Dylan songs too.
Yeah, I think four or five of the 12 songs on Mr. Tambourine Man were Bob Dylan songs.
Mm-hmm. And they're all good.
Yeah, they're excellent, especially done by the Byrds.
Yeah.
we have to mention, because we've talked about them on this podcast before, part of the background instruments, Leon Russell, who's worked with literally everybody.
Yeah. actually, that was one of Tom Petty's first gigs when he relocated from Gainesville, Florida, moving out to California. He holed up in Leon Russell's house for a while and writing and recording stuff with him.
That's awesome. It's so good. There is actually a Criterion Collection documentary on Leon Russell. Leon Russell, you should please try to find it. It's excellent. But yeah, and then so their next album, which was released like not long later, was an album called Turn, 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 which is, would you say it's like their most universally known song?
Yeah.
There's a Season, Turn, Turn.
Yeah.
Because this was in 1965, and this kind of, I would imagine, very Woodstocky-esque Flower Children type song. I mean, it's from the Old Testament for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That was put into this song.
Yeah, it's definitely a 60s flower power anthem for sure.
But on their second album, you still have Bob Dylan stuff. They even covered The Times They Are A-Changin'.
Yeah, which was, that song was huge, even, you know, a year or two before that. But because the music publishers were, you know, they're still striking while the iron's hot.
Yeah. And then the Byrds do it, and you're like, this band is awesome. Do it.
Yeah.
And then their last song on this album, Oh, Susanna.
Go figure.
Yeah, it's excellent. But yeah, you have Turn, Turn, Turn. You have It Won't Be Wrong, Set You Free This Time. He Was a Friend of Mine. And all these songs are like hits. Like, at least their first two albums, all the songs were definitive hits.
Yeah. And what's interesting when you think about, you know, music now, rock music, radio, like a band like the Byrds, I don't think would make it today.
Well, because nobody's into good music anymore. They're into horrible, horrible people and horrible, horrible music, such as Post Malone, Imagine Dragons, Cardi B. It's not real music. It's
style
lazy.
Over substance.
Well, yeah. It's like, what are they wearing? And I can make all of my music on a little machine that has four buttons.
I can make my music on Instagram.
Yep. It's unfortunate. And do you feel the same way that I do? Because...
Oh yeah, you're preaching in the choir here.
Okay.
But that's what makes, you know, bands like the Byrds and Bob Dylan and Beatles so unique and legendary, because no one's making music like that anymore.
No.
And as dated as some of the material might sound, it still sounds very fresh and new 50 plus years later.
And you've heard that the Byrds were, well, you know the Byrds, but you probably heard that Bruce Springsteen is the hardest working man in like the music industry.
Yeah.
No, the Byrds, they fucking released a new album like almost every year or twice a year.
Not to mention, you know, several singles within that time period too.
Yeah. They were just constantly working. And I think they knew how talented they were and they enjoyed working together. The money was coming in, and they're like, dude, we got this. We can do this. And then, like you said, the companies were like, do this song, do this song.
Yeah. Well, you can hear it in their song, So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. If you want to get a sense of what being a rock star is like and being in a band, listen to that song, and that tells you everything you need to know.
There you go. And that's AC/DC, right?
Yeah.
which we've talked about them on the show, too. And so their third album is called The Fifth Dimension, 1966.
Starts getting a little out there.
It's like they're going into more of like the drugs, psychedelic type stuff, right?
Yeah, the meditation, and you hear a lot of like very Indian-inspired ragas and drones.
which is interesting because if you start hearing like some of like the Indian type music, do you think the Byrds and like George Harrison got together and were like, ooh, we got to do something together?
Oh, I'm sure they got together at some point when the Beatles toured America. I mean, there were obvious influence for the Byrds. So, you know, it's the rock biz. I'm sure paths crossed and jams were had.
But yeah, you have so many hits on this one too. You have 8 Miles High, Hey Joe, John Riley, Mr. Spaceman, Wild Mountain Time. Damn good.
That's good. It's, you know, the earlier Byrds stuff, especially with David Crosby on it, it was just outstanding, especially the harmonies between him and Gene Clark and Roger McGuinn.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, Crosby takes those pipes with him when he's hanging out in Laurel Canyon and meets Graham Nash and Stephen Stills, and they get together, and Crosby, Stills, Nash.
Pretty damn good.
Good shit.
So after Fifth Dimension, which is better, Younger Than Yesterday, The Notorious Byrd Brothers, or Sweetheart of the Rodeo?
Well, it's like asking who your favorite child is. Some people might have an answer, but they're drastically different. I mean, Younger Than Yesterday is still David Crosby era.
Correct.
Shit, what was the other one you mentioned?
The other one right after,
Notorious Byrd Brothers.
Yes.
So that's post David Crosby.
Uh-huh.
They kicked his ass out of the band, and that was the album that they produced. Which is really good, except the song Chestnut Mare. I had a supervisor years ago who just absolutely hated that song. And I see why, cause it sounds like a love affair with his horse. It's a corny song. It should have been shelved as like a B-side, not an album cut. But it's still a great record. And one of the last mono Byrds records that came out, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you have like old John Robertson going back, Wasn't Born to Follow. And then a song called Dolphin Smile and Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
So you never know. But
Sweetheart of the Rodeo is fantastic because you have Graham Parsons enter the picture, and that's when it's full on country rock and roll, because he comes over from his band, International Submarine Band, from Lee Hazelwood's record label. And that album, Save at Home, is actually really good. In fact, they do a cover of a Merle Haggard song that I absolutely love called Someone Else You've Known. And that song is the reason why I tracked down Merle Haggard's Swingin' Doors album.
Oh, yeah?
Because it was never released as a single. I'm like, where the hell do I find this song? And it's basically a deep album cut, but it's like my favorite cut on the record.
That's cool. Yeah, no, this album is crazy because I think it's like the first time since their second album that they went back to a Bob Dylan song with You Ain't Going Nowhere.
Yeah, but which is excellent.
Yeah. But you also have like a Woody Guthrie song on here and Merle Haggard, like you said, and a second Bob Dylan too. They started with this album, they started with a Bob Dylan song and ended with a Bob Dylan song. Nothing Was Delivered was
yeah.
where they ended it.
Which those Dylan tracks end up on the Basement Tapes record.
Oh, really?
With the band.
Okay.
So eventually, you know, you get to hear those Dylan cuts and they're just as good, man.
No, that's badass. And then after the rodeo, you had Dr. Byrds and Mr. Hyde.
That's a great record. Actually, I don't think the Byrds put out a bad record.
You know, and they had Ballad of Easy Rider, Untitled, Farther Along, and then Byrds. And that was their last album in 1973.
Yeah, and that was actually the reunion album with all the original members.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. I take that back. Maybe Ballad of Easy Rider is probably their weakest. It's not a terrible record, but it's not one I listen to all the time.
According to chart positions, Dr. Byrds and Mr. Hyde and Farther Along didn't even make it in the top 100, but every single other one made it, either in the top 25 or top 50.
So the track that most people might be familiar with but don't know, it's a Bird song. Doobie Brothers, Jesus Is Just All Right With Me.
Really?
That's a Bird song.
That's a Bird song?
Yeah, that shows up on Ballad of Easy Rider.
That's awesome. Jesus is just all right.
I mean, if they sang songs like that in church, I would probably go more.
You would go more. So if you don't know that song, if you're a TV aficionado and you've seen the show Freaks and Geeks, in the second episode where Lindsay Weir is having a party at her house where her parents are gone, her friend Millie and Jason Segel play that on the piano. Jesus is just all right with me. Jesus is just all right.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah, the Birds and Bob Dylan, Parsons, they really were everywhere, and they have a few live albums, compilations out to Wazoo. They actually probably have 50 best of compilation albums.
Which, if you just buy their records, then you've got everything.
Correct.
But start with Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
So you would say if somebody who doesn't really, let's say they just know the song Turn, 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 mm-hmm. and you're like, you want to know more about the Birds, where do they start?
You could go the easy route and get Birds' Greatest Hits.
Yeah. But tell them to get an actual album.
The album cuts are usually better than the singles that the record company put out. So, Younger Than Yesterday is fantastic.
Okay.
Fifth Dimension is killer. Dr. Birds and Mr. Hyde, Notorious Bird Brothers. I mean, those are really good fucking records, man.
So, do you think the Birds... are the Birds, touring right now in any form of capacity with, new members or...
As a matter of fact,
holy shit.
So, Chris Hillman and Roger McGuinn are actually touring... Just a small amount, mind you, but they're doing some shows celebrating the 50th anniversary of Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
That's awesome.
Yes. I heard that they're playing Dallas.
Let's look.
I don't know if that's true or how much tickets cost, but I would love to see that.
All right. We're gonna look this up real quick. And see if they are actually touring. Let's see. Come on. All right. Roger McGuinn. Because we want to know, because how cool would we see part of the Birds tour right now? Wait a second. Is this for real? Right now, I see that they're coming. Roger McGuinn's coming to Dallas November 9th, my birthday, which sucks because I won't be in town. Bush League. But hold on. We're looking for you people. Chris Hillman tour dates. Let's look at that.
All right.
Okay, so they are coming to Dallas, Texas, November 9th, my birthday, at the Majestic Theater.
How much are tickets?
He's going to get them right now. November 9th. Come on now. Show me. Majestic Theater, which is a great, great venue here in Dallas. And we're looking. Prices between $40 and $90.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not so bad. So November 9th, you can see. But they're playing everywhere before then. They started out in Kansas City, Missouri, and it is September 18th right now, so they're in New York. They're going to make their way to Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, Kentucky, and then to Dallas, and then Austin for Austin City Limits, and then to Tennessee.
And I forgot Marty Stewart's playing with the band, too.
Yes, you're right.
Man.
Might have to do that. Tickets might be on sale right now, but maybe not, because it doesn't look like you can actually purchase tickets yet. But it looks like they've been selling out here and there, so that would be a really cool place to see them.
Indeed. And Majestic Theater is a kick-ass venue in Dallas, so...
It is true. The last concert I went to there was Beach Boys, and performing with the Beach Boys the whole time was John Stamos. Bonus.
Interesting.
He was amazing. He played guitar, he sang, and he played drums.
Uncle Jesse.
It was Uncle Jesse. So our good and terrible friend Warren and I went to that concert, and we had no idea John Stamos was going to play in there. We were already excited to see Beach Boys, but when we saw it was John Stamos, our hearts and crotches exploded with wonder and love.
Wait, did he play the entire show?
He played the entire show.
Did anyone explain why he was there?
So, actually, when I saw him, I remembered it, but he's played with the Beach Boys for years. And I've known, because he's a really good friend of Howard Stern, and he's had Howard Stern's had him on the show, that he is a very serious, like, musician. And, like, even at parties that he'll go to, he will... play at these parties, and he's like serious about it. But he's
interesting.
I guess supposedly, even in the show as Uncle Jesse, he's like, his band was Beach Boys, and I think they were even on the show. But he has like a relationship with them. So, but he plays several dates out of their whole tour schedule, and one of them was Dallas. But he came on stage, dude. He rocked it. Like, he played right along with them, and goddamn, he's still handsome. The dude's like 60 years old.
127 years old.
127 years old. Still looks like he's 25. But it was so funny because we were just so excited. It's like, that's Uncle Jesse. Holy shit. Where are our mushrooms? This just got a lot better. So, Majestic Theater, yes, very good. I remember Kimbrell and I saw David Byrne there, and that was an excellent show, one of the finer shows we've ever seen.
Indeed.
But yeah, they're coming, and that's the Birds. Please go check them out. Go try to find Soft Cell, Tainted Love, or even the Marilyn Manson version.
Better not bring your kids.
Mr. Kimbrell, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Brian.
Number 8, and hopefully you'll be coming back for episode 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, all the way on to episode 69. Excuse me. Where can everybody find you on this podcast? Where can they find you online?
They could find me online, classicwaxrecords.com. That's wax with 3 X's because 1 X just won't do. Mm-hmm. JonathanKimbrellFineArt.com if you are curious to see what I do for a living. It's not great living, but it's an honest one, at least.
It's a living, man.
Hey, beer man.
Check out Channel 9. Load that check.
Yeah, and you could occasionally find me on Instagram. Just type in Jonathan Kimbrell Fine Art. You'll find me.
Yes, you can find him on Instagram. And he doesn't like to say this a lot, but he loves to be sent videos of the music video Blinded by the Light.
God damn it. Pay no mind to him.
Pay no mind to him. So send him all sorts of stuff like that.
I'll take the original Bruce Springsteen version, but fuck the Manfred Mann version.
So good. And I'm Brian Kluger with BoomstickComics.com and HighDefDigest.com. And you can find this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Google Play. And you can find it at The Multimedia Men, or type in Boomstick Comics into iTunes and rate us. And you can find all of our shows, including this one, The Unbalanced Note, as well as my bloody podcast, Mediocrity. We Have Questions, all sorts of other fun ones. But yes, thanks for joining us. And we will be back next time. And before we leave, Kimbrell, what's the best bird song ever?
That's a tough one.
His mind went blank, folks. He doesn't know what he's doing right now.
I'll just say all of them.
All of them. It's a good, heck of a good political answer right
yes,
there.
It's fair.
All of them.
It's fair and balanced.
It's fair and balanced. There you go. We'll see you next time and next week. Unbalanced Note. We love you.